both North and South laid great stress on free will. Humans were free to choose the path of improvement. Remember we talked about Pico's Oration on the Dignity of Man, the idea that man had been given free will by God, and he could rise with the angels or sink with the beast. We mentioned at the end of the last lecture the paintings of the Sistine Chapel, where Michelangelo gives us a grand sort of Platonic allegory of the human condition. But basically, there in the central medallion of the ceiling, man is just inches from God, or God is just inches from man. And yet elsewhere, we see the drunkenness of Noah. So we have this wonderful sense again that it is our ability to choose. Shall we be depraved or shall we be sublime? Now, this is another point on which eventually Protestants and Catholics would divide. But initially, we can say that this psychological perspective, the importance of free will, was something that the Northern Renaissance and the Italian Renaissance shared. Now, as with the Italian Renaissance, let's take some case studies. Let's talk about some individuals. Let's sketch some portraits of some of the key figures in this Northern Renaissance movement and see what we can learn from them about what was distinctive in the North and what the North had in common with the South. Let's start with a French figure, Jacques Lefebvre d'Etaples. Jacques was born in 1455. He died in 1536. He's by far the most important of the French Christian humanists. Indeed, he himself sometimes called himself by the Latin form of his name, Jacobus Faber. Remember Aeneas Silvio Piccolomini, who called himself Aeneas Silvius? Very common in this time. Now, Jacques took a doctorate in Paris in the traditional learning. So he was educated in Paris University in the 15th century, in very much the way people had been being educated there for a long time. But he traveled widely, which was not so common, and then he spent a time, about a year, in Florence in 1491-92. Now, this was a time when philosophical studies at Florence, particularly the study of Plato and Aristotle, were perhaps at their very highest point. It's clear that Jacques was much influenced by his time in Florence. Now, on his return to Paris, he began to lecture on Plato and Aristotle. And he began studying the texts of these authors, applying to them the kind of scholarly scrutiny that he had encountered and learned about in Italy, that had previously been applied mainly to literary works. Now, what I'm talking about here really is this. These authors, of course, from antiquity until the Renaissance, had been transmitted in written copies, in handwritten copies. And as a result, one might very well read a text in one place and come to think that an author had said certain things. And then a bit later, one might go and read that same text someplace else and discover that there were small, or maybe even not so small, differences. So one of the things that the Renaissance humanists were doing was, for example, where literary works were concerned, let's suppose Virgil or the writings of Cicero or whoever it might be, collecting many, many manuscripts, collating these manuscripts very carefully, and trying to produce what we would call critical editions, trying to produce good editions of these texts, trying as far as they could to get back to what the author had actually written. Well, before Lefebvre d'Etaples, there had been relatively little work devoted to the philosophical corpus of antiquity. And he began then to lay that kind of stress on philosophical texts, but soon, Christian humanist that he was, his interests were attracted in a slightly different direction. He began to turn to the texts of the church fathers, and especially to the Greek church fathers, who were much less well known in the West, generally, and had been rather neglected by the Latin Catholic tradition. In 1505, he published an edition of the works of St. John of Damascus. John of Damascus lived from the late 7th to the mid-8th century. He's in many respects really the last of the Greek fathers of the church. In 1512, Jacques published commentaries on Paul's epistles. Here again, very typical of these Christian humanist figures to write biblical commentaries. Now, we've had occasion to see that the church fathers wrote biblical commentaries and that great medieval scholars wrote biblical commentaries.